Hour number two of 3D on this Monday morning. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Three more hours to go. Been a busy first hour, as you can imagine. Mary Kay Cabot. Willie, when I say that name, what do you think? Who's Mary Kay Cabot?
Mary Kay Cabot is a longtime NFL writer based out of Cleveland.
Exactly. Yeah. We've talked to her many times over the years. Listen to her tweet. Fired Titans. She just tweeted this out a little bit ago. Fired Titans coach Mike Mularkey is on the Browns radar for what opening? Fill in the blank.
Offensive coordinator?
Offensive coordinator. He's on the Browns radar to be their next OC. Interesting.
I think Mike Mularkey will get a job. And I think a lot of guys on that staff will get a job. They've done a good job. There's nothing.
Of course they'll get
nothing
jobs.
That they can.
I don't think he'll ever be a head coach.
They don't have
again.
To be ashamed at all about what they've done.
Of course not. Go back to back 9-7 seasons for a franchise that won what, 5 games in 2 seasons? Cameron Wolf covers the Titans for ESPN.com. Cameron, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. At Cameron Wolf on Twitter, give him a follow. So this is not what we all thought we were going to be waking up to. What changed? What changed overnight from yesterday's press conference, players cleaning out their lockers, to this morning, Mike Mularkey and the Titans have mutually agreed to part ways?
Yeah, from what I understand, they were starting to talk contract extension, which we were talking about yesterday. Potentially having Mike for a few more years. But I think as they started to talk about what this organization would look like going forward, what was the plan, what would the assistance look like, what was the next step to get to a championship contender, there were differences in how Mike was presenting it versus how Titans GM General John Robinson wanted to get to that next level. And I think a lot of it had to do with continuity in status quo, which was sort of the vibe we got from Mike Mularkey in his closing press conference, to a desire for change from the Titans front office. So that became a big sticking point, and it was time to move on.
I brought up last hour, everybody's focusing in on Josh McDaniels. The problem is the Colts and the Giants are focusing in on him too, and they've already talked to him. They've already interviewed him. The Titans haven't had that luxury because they've been playing until now. So they haven't had a chance to interview him. They're going to have to go through certain interview process because of league rules. What if Josh McDaniels chooses somebody else? I think everybody thinks he is going to be a head coach. So he's going to get hired when the Patriots season is over, and he's going to be coaching somewhere as their head coach. What if it's not here? What's plan B, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I definitely know that Josh McDaniels is their favorite, at least John Robinson's favorite. And, this is a real possibility that he could go elsewhere. I will say that this is the most appealing job for him, and it's believed to be a job that he, would want. So it may come down to monetary value or what he sees as more appealing. And I think with the uncertainty with Andrew Luck's shoulder and the quarterback situation in New York, I think Tennessee would seem to be the obvious choice. But like I said, there are many factors to get there. You've mentioned that they've interviewed with those teams and not with Tennessee yet. I think that, this may be a situation where they have to wait out the Patriots run because there can't be an official hire until their season's over anyway. So they make it to the Super Bowl, this may be a deal that doesn't end until, second week, third week of February. But plan B beyond McDaniels, you've got to look at someone who is a very different mind than Mike Mularkey. So you have to look at someone who can rebuild and shape around Marcus Mariota and maximize his skill sets. A guy like that would interest me would be two of the guys in Philly, whether it's quarterback coach John Delafippo or Frank Reich out there, their offensive coordinator. And then Pat Shurmur is doing a great job with the Vikings as well. So those are the three names that would come to mind for me outside of that realm. It looks like Matt Patricia is going to take that Lions job. So I think it's a big, heavy push towards McDaniels, but they've got to have plan B, and they've got to be careful because there's got to be a true search, and they've got to abide by the Rooney Rule and interview a African American candidate. We saw sort of how that blew over with the Raiders, so it will be interesting to see how this next few weeks will go.
We all feel like this was Mike Munchak all over again. It kind of played out the same way, especially since we were here covering that when that all happened. It feels the same exact way. But how much of this really is about they had crossed a line, the relationship between Mularkey and Robinson, that just to me, other than pulling off the upset of upsets, and that's going into New England and beating the Patriots, and us sitting here talking about an AFC championship game with them against Jacksonville. How much of this not, you know, once shots were fired, which is what he did after the Kansas City game, has played a factor in this? Because it's very clear, Mike Mularkey, and most would say, at least I'll say, probably for good reason. I understand why he wasn't happy because of the job that he's done, and for 3 weeks he had to hear that his job was in jeopardy. He wasn't happy about that, and they win a playoff game, and he took direct shots at the front office. How much of that still lingered and played a factor in this?
I'm sure it definitely did. You could see the tension between you couldn't see it, but there was tension between Mularkey and John Robinson, because remember, this isn't a guy that he brought in. You know, John Robinson was sort of brought in with the agreement that he would keep Mularkey as head coach. So as a general manager, you always want to have your guy. And when you don't have your guy and things are not going well, there's always looking outward. So I think Mularkey didn't feel security, and probably rightfully so. As we see, there wasn't a ton of security for him. And, you know, him calling him out, it was very risky at the time. I thought it was commendable for him expressing how he felt. But I do think it brought a situation for him that it was going to make it very tenuous for him and John Robinson to work together going forward, particularly if they didn't align in ideas. And it was clear that they didn't align on how to bring the Titans to that next step.
Cameron, do you think only time will tell, because it's always a gamble when you change coaches after a relative amount of success. We pointed out earlier in the show, we saw the stat. This is the first time a team has replaced a head coach after winning a playoff game since 2002, and that's going back a ways, Steve Mariucci. But Mike Mularkey still can walk away saying, hey, I did a lot of good things here, as well as the rest of his staff. So that may not be a bad thing, rather than be sort of the scapegoat if anything were to go wrong next year.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think everybody that looks at this team and says, oh, this team should be a championship contender if they get a new coach in. But we've got to remember that it's not that easy. First of all, it's not that easy to win a playoff game, be in the final eight. But it's also not that easy to assume that it will get turned around that easily. It wasn't too long ago that we had a Mike Munchak, Ken Whisenhunt situation where he was, you know, he parted ways with the organization, and everybody thought that, you know, it would go upward, and it went completely down with Ken Whisenhunt. So there's no savior in all of this. I know Josh McDaniels is the favorite, but he had a really bad run in Denver where a lot of his issues were not connecting with the players. And the Titans have a really good culture built there, so that's one element that they will have to be careful with. A lot of people have believed that McDaniels has fixed that and has gotten better and learned his lessons. But, you know, hiring an offensive mind may be great and it may fix your offense, but you have a whole team to worry about as far as a head coach. So I think all of those things will be considered and need to be considered as the Titans try to find their new head coach.
Cameron Wolf is with us. ESPN staff writer, covers the Titans for ESPN.com. Cameron, you're in there every day, much more so than we are. And so I'm curious, your angle or your speculation on how the dynamic worked with Amy Adams Strunk, John Robinson, and Mike Mularkey while this was festering for a while there. You had the two statements last week and this week. Today with Amy Adams Strunk saying, hey, we worked on a new deal for Mike Mularkey. Couldn't come to terms. You know, she chose her words carefully within the statement. And, of course, last week's vote of confidence, and he's our coach moving forward here. How do you think it worked behind the scenes where John Robinson, I guess, gained the authority to be able to say this is the way we need to go to Amy Adams Strunk, where she was on board? Because she seemed to be a big fan of Mike Mularkey.
Yeah, no, she was. She was a big fan of Mike Mularkey, and she was the reason why he got the head coach. She hired him. John Robinson didn't hire him, and she thought that he could be the guy to lead forward. And I think over the last couple of years, she gained a lot of trust in John Robinson. He was elevated to executive vice president last season, and I think that she really respected his football mind, and he probably had more of a input on this decision making over this last year. And I think that statement was them winning a playoff game and wanting to galvanize the fan base and the team. But yeah, like you mentioned, it was carefully written, and I think there's little question going forward who the power player is in Tennessee, and it's John Robinson. You know, it's his team. Whoever comes in will be his head coach, and will report to him, and there won't be any fracture between what the head coach wants and the general manager wants. And I think that's something that is significant. And, you know, whether the Titans go forward as far as making that next step or going backwards, that will fall on general manager John Robinson's shoulders. So this is his move. This is his step forward. And the success or failure of his team will be because of, you know, what John Robinson decides.
Cameron, did you sense that they were, as the quote goes, "We discussed extending his future with our team over the past week," which would lead you to believe it was happening while they were preparing to play the biggest game in the franchise's last 10 years. You know, they're playing the Patriots here. So were they actually doing that, or do you think that's not a fair characterization of what when that went down? When did they discuss a possible contract extension?
Yeah, from what I heard, I was told by a league source that it was starting last week after that Kansas City win that they had initial talks about extending Mike Mularkey. So there were talks leading up to the Patriots week. I'm not exactly sure how far those talks go. I know I saw a report that he was offered the job. I offered an extension. I didn't necessarily hear that. I just heard initial talks. But I know that this is a situation where, like I mentioned, there are different views on how to get the next step. And I think Mike Mularkey really hurt himself, at least with the fan base and probably with the front office as well, with how he conducted his season-ending press conference. He talked a lot about continuity. He said he didn't plan to make any coaching changes with his assistants. And he basically said the offensive struggles were because of inconsistencies and mistakes. And that's just not an acceptable answer. There was clearly, you know, scheme issues. There was clearly need to make staff changes on multiple levels. And I think his stubbornness or his inability to see that there needed to be change really cost him in the end.
So, Cameron, what was the vibe like at the press conference? Because as you just mentioned, with this sort of unresolved, it appeared to be unresolved going into the press conference yesterday. One, I was curious as to why they went ahead and did it, if it was truly unresolved, or do you think the tone really changed after the way he conducted the press conference?
I think it definitely had a role in it because it felt defiant to me, just kind of as my perspective. You know, it felt like it was, you know, we're doing this my way, and it felt in a sense that he was defending what he's done. He began the press conference talking about bringing this team from the sort of the bottom of the NFL to where they are now and won a playoff game for the first time in 14 years. And all of that is true. But it seemed like he was more focused on the progress they've made rather than the progress they still need to make. And I think that's where the divide came about, is that there was a heavy risk, in my opinion, of this team reaching its plateau, and that we may have saw the best of the Titans, and, you know, it may go all downhill from here. And I think that was the big worry from the Titans front office, and Mike did nothing to alleviate those concerns by, you know, preaching a message of continuity and status quo. And, you know, that's an area where, like you mentioned, you can't have that disconnect from how to become that next level between your head coach and your front office.
That was very bizarre to me, and I'm guessing the way you're explaining it, Cameron, when you guys all walked out of there last night, there had to be a lot of you going, "Wow, what was that?" That had to be very surprising, and then to have it turn around like this morning so quickly, you wonder what happened from the end of that press conference to where we sit now.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think, in lack of a better phrase, it felt like he was digging himself, you know, a deeper, you know, digging his heels in or digging a deeper grave for himself, because it was a situation where he could have easily said, hey, you know, there are some changes that need to be made, whether it's staff, whether it's personnel, whether it's, you know, looking internally and deciding what we need to do better as coaches. We'll look at that all this offseason, and we'll come back a better team. If he makes that type of statement to us, if he makes that type of statement to the front office and agrees to, you know, make some adjustments, I think we may be looking at a different situation here. I don't know that for certain, but I think that we are, because, you know, this team looked like they were happy with the culture that Mike Mularkey built here. It was just a need to adjust to what they were doing offensively, and he appeared unwilling to do that.
All right, Cameron, a couple quick hitters to wrap this up. There was a report out also, along with all the Mike Mularkey stuff, that DeMarco Murray, that the Titans were going to move on from him. Do you believe that was it for DeMarco Murray, and they're going to turn things over to Derrick Henry moving forward?
It hasn't been finalized yet, but I do think that there's a decent chance, is how I would put it, that DeMarco Murray's played his last game in a Tennessee Titans uniform. He talked to us yesterday, and after he's cleaning out his locker, and he said he still believes he can be a top-end feature back. He said that he would be willing to come back in a 1-2 punch with Derrick Henry, but he doesn't, you know, it's going to be up to the decision makers to decide that, that and whether he would take a pay cut. So I know Mike Mularkey was a big fan of DeMarco. So once you get in a new staff, you'll have to decide what does fits with that offense. And it may not be DeMarco. It may not even be Derrick Henry.
Okay, three veteran wide receivers on this team. How many are back? Rashard Matthews, Harry Douglas, Eric Decker. Who's back?
I don't think Eric Decker's back. I don't think Harry Douglas is back. And I wouldn't be surprised if Rashard Matthews isn't back. I think Rashard has the best chance of the three. But I think that we see a completely different vibe as far as receivers. We see more speed, more playmaking ability. I'd say either zero or one. And I'd probably lean a little bit more towards zero.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Hey, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. See you.
Read his stuff on ESPN.com. Cameron Wolf, at Cameron Wolf.
He's going to be busy.
On Twitter. We'll come back and discuss some of that and also take your phone call. 737-1025. More of 3D next.
As a team, we have a lot to improve on. I think that we showed that a lot throughout the year. Inconsistent play on offense. At times, our defense struggled, but for the most part, carried our team. Our special teams, I think, were pretty good all year. But as an offense, you know, I'll be the first one to say that we underachieved this year. And to make it this far, that's you know, extremely promising. But we can't do that again in the 2018 season. We got to come out guns blazing. We have the firepower to do it. It's just a matter of getting it done.
Titans left tackle Taylor Lewan yesterday, saying that they underachieved. Of course, tough news coming out about Jack Conklin, torn ACL. Not good on his front, so I don't know what that means. Was there a timetable set? So we're sitting here in, what, mid-January? Obviously, the whole offseason will be scrapped.
Mularkey did say yesterday he could be a candidate for the PUP list just because of the timing.
Start the season?
That's what Mularkey said yesterday.
Of course, doesn't start till September. I mean, guys have come back.
Yeah.
Guys have come back
in that
time.
This is what we have known, of course. You know, what's interesting, Darren, you and I have both had the ACL surgery. Everyone is different. In fact, the team doctor is the same guy, I think, if he does it. I'm sure there's more than one person that can perform that procedure. But the team doctor might well be the same guy that did my ACL surgery. Not that that means anything, but he's one of the best in the country. Dr. David Moore, he's the team doctor. He's done stuff with the Predators in the past. I've known him for a long time. One of the best going on there. But when you open it up, one thing that I came to understand when you do it, sometimes there's other factors that can contribute to how long it takes you to come back. First of all, the guy's a big guy, right? Mm-hmm. Jack Conklin, that's a lot of mass and weight that has to support that. Also, when you get in there, Is it just the ACL, or is there a lot of cartilage damage? Yeah. Is there other things going on that can affect it? I've seen people come back in 6 or 7 months and be okay.
But well, sometimes Adrian Peterson was the first one to have everybody go, wow, that was quick. He came back and he was ready for the start of the season.
But sometimes it takes longer. So if everything went perfect, you know, you're talking about 8 months to get back for the start of training camp. That's not completely unreasonable.
No.
Right? Almost 8 months. But realistically, could it take, you know, the entire preseason and then,
like I said,
two or three games
the
into the regular season?
Yeah.
That's possible too. And that was really tough. I mean, Tony Romo said it. By the way, I really enjoy Tony Romo. How many times did he look at the alignment before the snap and give you a good?
It's really good.
He's got a great knack for that. He's
Does anybody else
wrong.
Think he sounds like Boomer Esiason? If you close your eyes, I think they sound a lot alike. At first, I thought it was Boomer.
They don't have
like,
the same accent though.
No, but I think they sound a lot alike. Maybe I'm crazy. Has anybody else thought that? At first, I was like, why is Boomer in the booth with Nance? I thought this was Romo, and I kept listening. I was like, that sounds like Boomer Esiason. Of course, it was Tony Romo, but I think they sound alike. He's really good.
But one thing Tony Romo pointed out is once Conklin was out, it changed the game. And I do believe that. I would have liked to have seen if the offense could have been more effective had he stayed in there, especially with Derrick Henry. I mean, the Patriots took him away. That's plain and simple.
We have to give John Robinson credit for the Dennis Kelly trade. That Dennis Kelly trade was highway robbery of Philadelphia because he did exactly what they needed him to do.
But he's a stopgap. He's a very nice sub. But the problem is in the playoffs.
Yeah, but how many
you need your guys.
And they've relied on him when things have gone wrong. Taylor Lewan gets kicked out in the first quarter of a game last year. You know, he has been able
to
fill
in. They have turned out to need Dennis Kelly
more than DGB.
Yeah.
Well, and they've used him on special plays, too.
Yeah, as the third tight end, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
I
get the feeling now.
It's a really good trade.
Now the way it's going, it's going to be a totally different offense now.
Okay, you heard me ask Cameron Wolf of the three receivers. I just wanted to hear his answer. I'm not sure any of them are back. I think they're probably all gone. And I just think that, well, I guess we probably, for it to be a little bit more definitive, I think I need to see who the head coach is first.
Right, sure.
That would help.
Sure.
But if it's an offensive-minded guy, if it's a Josh McDaniels, to me, it makes sense that they are going to upgrade it to more speed. They're going to try to stretch the – are they going to go up-tempo? Are they going to speed things up? That could change things. To me, I think they all had a nice role. Harry Douglas was more behind the scenes. But Decker and Rishard Matthews were really good this year. But I just sense that they were moving on. I think Rishard Matthews, it's probably a little bit more about some of the stuff he did
off the field. That's what I wonder. I wonder.
I think that's going to play a factor into it.
It has everything to do with Rishard Matthews' outlook, feeling on life, and that is he has every right to do that. But remember, John Robinson is now running the show more so than ever. I think it is the Patriot way of no distractions. I don't care what the cause is. All of that stuff is on your own time when you're here. This is how we do it. Same thing with Kevin Byard's comment during the week last week.
Dumb.
I think the Patriots, if you look, they don't ever do anything like that.
Jarrell Casey, let's not leave him out. As great of a player is it, but he said, did you see what Malik Jackson said after Jacksonville's win?
I did.
Right at Jarrell Casey. You can watch us play next week.
Yeah.
You're sitting at home.
Right.
About the Blake Bortles
comments. Did you see the reaction of Josh McDaniels on the sideline when Rob Gronkowski caught the touchdown? It was a meaningless touchdown. They were going to win the game anyway. Yep. It was over. But he went nuts on the sideline when Gronk caught the touchdown over Kevin Byard.
Yep.
You know that they use that. And again, that's a young player making a mistake. But I'm very curious now. John Robinson, he has now basically said, I'm taking over. So that I don't think bodes well for Rishard Matthews. That's just my gut feeling. Even though I'm 100% behind Rishard Matthews and how strongly he feels about the things that he did. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't think John Robinson is on board with that.
Yeah, I didn't like the "I'm going to retire" comment. That was the one that really rubbed me the wrong. Then retire. Leave the game. Go coach high school football, make $32,500 a year, and, you know, good luck to you. It was very hollow. I didn't like that. I just didn't like some of the antics that he pulled. He's been a really good receiver here. Nobody saw him putting up the numbers that he did. Became their go-to guy. I mean, the number one target. But I just have felt like, to me, it's like the Steelers. I think they're going to have to shake things up. You know, talking about the Patriots, look at all the talking they did. All the talking. And it blew up in their face. That's what you never hear the Patriots do, ever. All the talking. Haven't even played the game. And guess what? They're sitting at home. Jacksonville's playing New England.
I think you're going to see more of an influence on John Robinson and the next
Moving
staff.
Moving forward, I agree.
Now, Decker is interesting to me because I think Eric Decker, because of his situation, his wife lives here, I think he might be a guy that would take another one-year deal. I don't know what the market's going to be for him. Maybe he gets offered a two-year deal somewhere else. I thought he, by the end of the year, did some good things. He did have the dropsies there. But he strikes me as a guy that might fit in a Josh McDaniel role player kind of thing for a value. I mean, he's not going to command big money, but if he's willing to come back for a cheap price again, could he be an extra guy? Maybe. I do think you're going to see a considerable amount of turnover, though, at wide receiver.
Yeah. Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, what's up?
Yeah, love your show. I just had a quick comment. I moved here years and years ago from Los Angeles. I had a lot to do with sports. My family does too. And I love it here. But, you know, I've just always asked the question. I just think we need to step this up a couple of levels. Really do. I think Titans have opportunity that's unbelievable. The city has a ton of money. It has all the, you know, the ingredients to be make the Super Bowl. I've just never understood why we can't get a rock star coach. We got, I think, the quarterback that's awesome. But why can't we get a coach that has a huge name and some receivers that are rock stars?
All right, well, give us some names, Lisa. I mean, who are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you know, I wish like someone like Roden. I know that he's kind of been out of it. And the thing is I do realize that there's younger coaches coming up. I'm kind of old school, so I know some of them have gotten a little bit older. But just somebody that's real high-powered. I just think Nashville deserves – I think we don't get the respect that we deserve.
Okay, but let me ask you something. Would you rather be – I don't know, flashy? By the way, Sean McVay was flashy, young, whippersnapper, right? How are the Rams doing? How are they doing in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Would you rather be Doug Marrone, which nobody cared about that hire? We know him. Good guy, old school guy, no flash whatsoever. And guess who's still playing? Jacksonville.
Right, he gets it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I wish I knew the answers. I just get so frustrated, but I know they have a lot of good ingredients, but I hope whoever gets to coach is somebody that is coming from somewhere that has had a lot of maybe I'm saying that hire someone that's had a pretty big history of wins.
Okay.
Maybe that's what I'm getting at.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
Love your show. Bye-bye.
I don't really think it's about flash. Well, you know, we hear, and we've already taken a call on this, you know, Mike Mularkey just doesn't show any emotion. Right, we used to get that all the time with Mike Munchak. That is the most overblown statement out there from fans. I don't understand the whole show emotion. I mean, Bill Belichick doesn't show any emotion. What difference does it make? To me, it's not about flash. It's not about name recognition. It's just simply – it's really up to John Robinson and the scouts to build themselves a winning roster. That's really what it comes down to. Like I said, nobody was going, wow, Doug Marrone, holy cow, Jacksonville, good for you. When the Titans kept Mike Mularkey, nobody was going, wow, good move, Tennessee. Well, guess what? Tennessee, the Titans, and the Jags were the two of the four teams left standing in the AFC when you get down to it. So it's not really about flash or name recognition or By the way, coaches that have done a lot of winning, well, Andy Reid's done a lot of winning in the regular season.
Yeah,
How's Andy Reid in January?
The demeanor on the sideline doesn't mean a whole lot to me one way or the other. Both can be effective. It's just how effective are you as a coach. It's interesting. Doug Marrone, he was interested in this job when Mike Mularkey got the job. Remember, he was a free agent at that point. He had walked away from the Bills. They ended up latching on with Jacksonville and got the job and then was kind of like a Mike Mularkey. Inherited the job in a bad situation and is now he now looks pretty smart.
Mike Zimmer isn't some up-and-coming whippersnapper. Mike Zimmer's old school, been around a long time. Guess what? Minnesota's one game away from playing for the Super Bowl. Jacksonville's one game away from playing for the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick isn't a young whippersnapper. Mid-60s, old school guy, been around forever. They probably are going to play in the Super Bowl again.
This is another thing that I think is in the backdrop of John Robinson. And we've hit on this theme before, and I feel like this will be the theme of the offseason. He knows that his team could be better next year, quite a bit better, and still not make the playoffs because this division is now turning. The Jacksonville Jaguars just took a huge step forward yesterday, and they're only going to get better. We know that Houston's going to feel pretty good when they get Deshaun Watson back, that they can still be a pretty good team, right? And then there's the Colts with Andrew Luck, which is an X factor. But if he comes back at all, they're not going to be worse than they were last year. They'll be better. So they have to be way better next year to have the same amount of success, just to get back to the playoffs, let alone be ready to go into the playoffs with a legit chance to win.
And a division that's no longer the laughingstock.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Not at all. It's now become, who knows?
It will be harder to go 9-7 next
year. With Deshaun Watson and depending on what Andrew Luck comes back, you know, this division is taking a gigantic step forward. I mean, we just had two teams come out of the division, which seemed laughable at the beginning of the season, right?
You could be better next year and go 8-8. You could be a better team next year and go 8-8.
Absolutely. Doug, you're up next. What's up?
Hey, guys. Like them, hate them, love them, but the New England Patriots have shown what it looks like and what it takes to be a champion. Heck, even the last two Super Bowl champs, you know, Seattle and New England, have shown that the Titans do not look like those two teams. Basically, we're a Chevrolet fleet trying to run with Cadillacs. If you want to beat the man, you got to start looking like the man. There needs to be a change if we're going to be in the upper echelon of the NFL.
And is the change what the rumors are, or what do you think, Doug?
Oh, I mean, either way, we don't run with Seattle or New England. John Robinson comes from that cut or claw. He knows what it takes. He knows what it looks like. And anybody can see the Titans do not look like a New England Patriots team. Heck, when you have wide receivers that don't go to the Pro Bowl, but they keep going to the Super Bowl, what does that say? New England knows how to do it with little talent. And we've got some decent talent. We just got to turn it around. Mularkey's a good guy, but he's not the upper echelon coach in the NFL.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. I'm not sure who stacks up to New England. I mean, if New England, we get it. They're the bar, but, I mean, who really, when you think about it, stacks up to them? Who looks like they can go toe-to-toe with New England? I mean, there's not very many teams or coaches that fit that category.
Do you think, I mean, just off the top of your head, but we discussed the line. The Patriots are a 9-point favorite.
Well, we discussed it off the air.
Okay.
Yeah. You asked me what is the line.
Yeah, you were right
in
the ballpark.
It's probably flirting around double digits, 9.5, 10. And you said it was, what'd you say, 9?
It's 9, according to Bovada. I'm sure it varies by a point or two, and it will throughout the week. But do you think the Jags have the ability. I'm really curious to see what that Jags defense does against the Brady offense.
Willie, I have no idea. I didn't think they had a snowball's chance, and you know what, of beating Pittsburgh again. What do I know about Jacksonville? I watched them against Buffalo. I watched them here, and I was like, yeah, Blake Bortles has reverted back to his old self. Yeah, I realize their defense is really good, and they can run the football, but they're not going to beat Pittsburgh twice.
Now, let's see.
Pittsburgh.
Let's also see what Tom Coughlin
owned Pittsburgh yesterday.
The Tom Coughlin Doug Marrone approach. I wonder if they will fall as a very young team, flamboyant, right? Energetic defense with a lot of confidence right now. Their confidence is growing every week. Will they fall into any of the traps with any kind of trash talk or anything like that this week against the Patriots? I wonder how Tom Coughlin's influence will filter
through
there.
Well, he kind of knows how to beat New England. He's kind of done it twice.
Absolutely.
On the biggest stage.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yep. Mike, Steve, Josh, we'll get to you on the other side. Ian Rappaport will join us at 12:45 today. We'll also carry the John Robinson press conference live at 1 o'clock. More of 3D next. Willie, I think we know who's going to be the next coach of the Tennessee Titans. We go to the desk. Chase McAbabe is standing by. Chase, you have a tweet to read.
I have a tweet. This comes from Jason Lockenfora.
Hold your laughter, please.
No, I'm just kidding. As much as...
I said hold your laughter.
As much as the Titans covet Josh McDaniels, there's little to no shot of landing him this late in the game. The Colts remain heavy favorites. The next tweet, McDaniels is a virtual lock to be Colts' next head coach. Patricia going to Detroit, Shermer headed to the Giants, leaves Arizona, Tennessee needing head coaches. Of everyone on my original list of 22 candidates for head coaching jobs, big surprise is no interviews for Philly OC Frank Reich. Tennessee needs a quarterback guy.
Okay, well, it looks like Josh McDaniels is coming. If Lock and Forrest says has no chance.
You're going opposite. You're saying,
he's their guy.
That's what I think.
It makes you feel better about that. Okay.
I'm not rooting one way or the other. I'm just saying it's going to happen. Lock and Forrest says it virtually has no shot. Okay. That means Josh McDaniels will be the next Titans head coach. Josh in West Tennessee. Josh, what's up?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to chime in on the malarkey situation. As a guy who's a high school coach now, man, I think it's absolutely preposterous what the Titans have done to malarkey. You know, he's a guy that comes in and takes over a pro team that was absolutely incompetitive in all their games and was tasked with going out and win. And not only did he win, he turned around a team, took them to the playoffs. Not only took them to the playoffs and won a game. So all those guys out there who are malarkey haters, man, all I got to say is be careful what you wish for, because this guy got you back to where you wanted to be, and in all likelihood did more than we all ever thought he could. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Hang up and
yeah.
Listen.
Thank you, Josh. Look, there is that, without a doubt. The Titans have been through this before, and we've brought it up. I mean, you have to be very careful, because Mike Munchak refused to make staff changes, and they parted ways, and they hired Ken Whisenhunt. Now, Tommy Smith hired Ken Whisenhunt. Tommy Smith is no longer making those type of calls, but it took a franchise that went 9-7 one season under Mike Munchak and threw them into a huge, huge tailspin, set the franchise back many, many years. So you do have to be careful and leery of that.
It was interesting, too, that Mike Munchak was the guy that brought in Mike Malarkey originally. It brought him into the fold.
That is correct.
Ken Whisenhunt kept him around, and then he was the guy coming in. News of note from the Predators practice. Victor Arvidsson helped off the ice at practice by two trainers, not putting weight on his leg. So that apparently just happened not long ago. So keep your fingers crossed on that one. That's not good news.
Not good at all. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up next. Welcome in.
Hey, great show, guys.
Thanks.
I mean, what just happened here with Malarkey? That's like if I go to work and my work production is getting better and I get fired anyway. You know, it's like these people have these delusions of grandeur, like we need to be the Patriots. You don't have Bill Belichick, they can forget about it. It's like a dog chasing a car. Once the dog catches the car, what you going to do with it? So this is on the rock star, John Robinson. This is going to be his baby, and he better go 9-7. He better get to the playoffs and win a game to save face, because it's all on him now.
You know what? You know what, Steve? Hold on one second. You know what it felt like when you said that? It felt like the SEC West when you said that. Right? Everybody in the West is trying to keep up with Nick Saban, and so they're constantly turning things over because nobody can compete and stand up to Alabama, so they keep making changes. When you said that, that's what it felt like. I'm not saying that's what it is, but it just felt that way.
Well, it's kind of similar. Yeah, chasing the car. And when you catch the car, can't do nothing with it.
Chasing the standard, right? I mean, you're right. There's only one Bill Belichick. There's only one Nick Saban. So.
Right. Only one Tom Brady. Only one Peyton Manning. We need to quit chasing this new one. And just we got to start from scratch and do something new.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And, you know, but you do have your franchise quarterback that you drafted second overall, and that played a big factor in this. When your franchise quarterback takes a step backwards in year number three, remember, he went the other way. From year one to year two, he made the proper steps. Year three, more interceptions than touchdown passes. And with a huge contract looming in the background, they have to know what they have in their franchise quarterback before you throw out $125 million to a guy you're not 100% sure that you need to be given $125 million to.
Here's a couple of things we need to, because, of course, this is an ever-changing picture, right? All of these reporters who are trying to get the scoop on coaching changes are coming out with things. I'm really curious to hear what Mr. Rappaport says with us next hour, because there does seem to be more than just Locke and Fora, that the Colts have good relationships with Josh McDaniels, that they've been working very closely together. So it is certainly not a foregone conclusion that John Robinson can just magically say, Josh McDaniels, come on down. Now that this is open, this is where you want to be. He might have his chance to make the case, but it may not be the slam dunk. John McClain, our good buddy from down in Houston. The Titans are going to interview Texans defensive coordinator Mike Vrabel, another longtime Belichick personality off of the family tree. Defensive coordinator, though, great linebacker for a long time. That would be interesting.
Because it goes against what we've been talking about, an offensive mind.
But at the same time, it's the Patriot way. You would then have to find
which,
the offensive
mind. Which,
once again,
I don't think is that great. The Patriot way, when it leaves Bill Belichick, hasn't been great in Tom Brady.
True.
Hasn't been great. In fact, it's been, most cases, awful. Mike in Gallatin. Mike, what's up?
Hey, guys. So I really was liking the comment you were making right before the break about how next season it's going to be just as tough, if not tougher, to go to 9-7 like we had. A lot of the wins we had this season, I'm not trying to discredit the fact that we made the playoffs and we won a game. That's a big accomplishment for Malarkey. We got to give him Thomas that. But we beat teams like the Colts without a quarterback, the Texans without a quarterback, the Browns. And a lot of those wins, it was not like they were really all that impressive anyway. We won by, like, the skin of our teeth. And that's, again, I mean, we're all repeating things and spinning in circles here. But if Mariota's not working out with the system, we have to change it. Now, what I think personally, I know this is not as easy or said than done, but the Jaguars went out and they opened their pocketbook deep to go get themselves a whole lot of, like, playmaker stones on defense. And I felt like the Titans got the second end of the free agent pool. And I'm not saying that that's always the answer to all your questions, but, man, I would have killed to have Calais Campbell or a couple of those other guys to add to our team to make our defense a little more grittier, because we lacked on professional playmakers that make our defense elite.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you, Mike. Yes, they did get Calais Campbell, and he's been a perfect fit for them in Jacksonville. But when you draft Jalen Ramsey and you draft Leonard Fournette, they're game changers. Those guys have changed both sides of the ball. Leonard Fournette, I wasn't even sure he was going to come back in that game. He came back to run for three touchdowns. I mean, or maybe two. Did he already have one at that point? I guess he already had one. Came back to score two more touchdowns. Jalen Ramsey, Nashvillian.
He's a player.
Man, he's just the real deal. I mean, Jalen Ramsey is outstanding. So in two draft picks, two very high draft picks, they changed both sides of the ball.
But also it's the ability to draft. You get that high-end talent, but then you have to put the right pieces around it. Campbell is a big pickup. Darius, the trade for the former Alabama defensive lineman, he's helped them, too.
Marcel Darius
against the run has
he's a load
certainly
up front.
Improved. Yes. They've got a legit D. Ben Roethlisberger, he threw for over 400 yards. But the four touchdown passes, two of them were on fourth down.
Yeah,
he put it in a tight window.
His stats look great.
No, but what I'm saying is the throws he had to make to complete the touchdowns were incredible throws.
No question.
The guy, Jalen Ramsey and Boy, they were right on him. Those guys, Brown made a couple of incredible catches for those touchdowns.
He also missed 21 passes. That just tells you, I mean, he threw the ball 58 times.
Yeah, the coverage. There weren't guys running wide open.
58 times. By the way, no quarterback has ever – I think that's – did I see that right? No quarterback has ever put up those numbers in postseason play and ever lost? I mean, that
nobody's
makes
ever
sense,
thrown
right?
for 5 touchdown passes and lost in a playoff.
That
game.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Usually, when you score 42 points at home,
usually you win
in the playoffs. That's usually a W. Come back, hour number 3 of 3D. Ian Rappaport at 12:45. John Robinson's press conference live at 1 o'clock. You're listening to 3D, ESPN 102.5, The Game.